Language, it never stops evolving, and maybe that's the rub. Some people hold on to language traditions. Others are more open to allow language a little breathing room to live in the moment. Merriam-Webster added 455 new words and definitions to its dictionary this fall. We will not get to all of them on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. But there is room for your curiosities with language, 800-642-1234. Are there new words that confuse you? What words or phrases jumped out at you this year? The lexicographer, the person who compiles dictionaries, and the linguist is here to help. Grant Barrett, co-host, co-producer of Away With Words, airs Sunday mornings at 9 on the Ideas Network, has helped produce dozens of dictionaries. Grant, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well and so happy to talk about language.
Yay!
You're about, you know, to shut down another year on words and phrases. We always want to compare, right? It seems especially true in pandemic years. How does 2021 stack up to other years in the number of new words and phrases that you've seen come out of the woodwork?
It is impossible to count, but it was a highly productive year. Both the pandemic and finance and just on the online world never stops producing new language. It just goes and goes and goes. We are a creative species. We generate language. We never stop with the language. We have so much fun making new words as humans. We just keep spilling them out like water overflowing a bowl. It's just nonstop.
I've always wanted to ask you this. I wonder, what effect does social media have on the evolution of words and slang and what catches on? What have you seen there?
For the most part, social media is a great transmitter. That means that when a word is created, it travels faster and goes further. But that also means that words burn out faster.
Ah.
Whereas a word might have had, say, a few years to, you know, live and kind of fade away in the past, now that cycle can happen in a month or two because there's something about the cachet of a word that grows stale once everyone else knows about it. You know, once you realize, oh, what I thought was the in-group word for me and my people, now they're using it in ads on television? No, I'm not going to use it anymore. Now that cycle is just, it's so speedy that the churn is there. It's a constant churn.
And only the in-group will work on those social channels.
Right. Yeah. To identify yourself as part of the group, you've got to have the in-group language.
So
new words are constantly coming up in that group.
My late mother talked wall-to-wall in idioms, really loved to traffic in those tired phrases and those really bad similes. And I've really embraced that tradition in her. I talk the same way with my kids to kind of honor the way that she used language. And I love to explain idioms to my kids all the time. And I'm wondering, where did you find your love of language?
It's twofold. One, when I was 10, my grandmother gave me J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit. And Tolkien was, besides being a contributor to the Oxford English Dictionary, was a lover of language. In his subsequent books, The Lord of the Rings, he made new languages. He invented languages for his characters, and he explains them in the appendices. And then when I was 13, and this dovetails to my other career as well, besides my career as a dictionary editor, I figured out a way to turn a regular AM radio into a shortwave receiver. And it was really easy. You just kind of wrap a wire around the iron rod on the inside, so you kind of change the tuning range of it. And that meant that I could hear languages spoken on shortwave radio, which transmits around the world, you know, it bounces off the ionosphere. So I could hear Russian and French and German and Chinese and just tons of languages. It was amazing to me. Amazing. And
it was a language buffet.
A language buffet. Yeah. And you know, I was learning Spanish in school from somebody who didn't speak as a native speaker, but I was hearing it on shortwave from native speakers, you know, from Ecuador, you know, from Mexico, from Spain, from wherever. It was lovely and wonderful. And so that's also the start of my love of radio right there. That's really where radio started for me, as long with working into my language habit.
Well, speaking of radio, let me reintroduce you, Grant Barrett, with us, co-host of Away With Words, spending the hour with him, and we're going to be dissecting the year in language. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Willem is joining us from Colfax. Willem, hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I was just wondering about not so much words in a way, but pronunciation. Like, I've noticed that, and this is mostly amongst young people, when they say words like important or mountain, that they don't enunciate the T, like they say important, or I can't really, it's hard for me to even do it. But I'm wondering when that started and how that started and what's up with that?
Kind of a looser diction, if you will, and always the young people there, Grant.
It's true. Particularly young women tend to be the innovators in language, and the innovations tend to start with them, and they tend to spread from them, and they tend to be the ones to pick up the ones that are, if other people create them, that are the most useful and have the highest function. So you've got a good ear there. What you're hearing is sometimes called a flapping, so that instead of important, nobody says important in the United States or in Canada. Nobody, except if they're going to sound silly if they do. They're going to say important. We say it as a D. And then that D sometimes becomes a glottal, where instead of being pronounced with the tongue on the front of the palate, at the top of the mouth, it moves to the back of the mouth, and it kind of comes a guh. You know the famous Cockney bottle instead of bottle? It's a little more like that. And it's not just words like important. It becomes like kitten, and mountain becomes mountain, and Clinton becomes Clinton. My son, who's 14, has this. So he's very much of his generation. I believe it started in the East Coast in the New York City metropolitan area and spread through social media. But before that, it spread through hip hop and MTV and things like that, because it's very common. It's commonly a part of the African-American English spoken in that region. And so I think shows like MTV Cribs and a variety of hip hop artists have helped promote this, or not promote it, but help spread it and give it some prestige.
Willem, thank you for the call. Julie now in Mazamani. Julie, hi, what's on your mind about language?
Hi, guys. Hi, Grant. This is really cool to get to talk to you. My husband and I are very definitely word people, and we love to, you know, learn synonyms to sprinkle into our speech or foreign words to sprinkle into our speech. But there are a couple of occasions in our life where we've never been able to really find the right word to fit the occasion. So we have made up a couple words that I will share with you. The first one, when one of us is feeling really frustrated, and I'll say it's like when your computer is acting up and you do everything you can to get it going and it's not going, we tell each other that we're feeling cranky.
Like as in frustrated, and
cranky.
Gotcha.
Yep,
uh-huh.
We are. And that's a scary one. If I tell my husband I'm Frankie, he knows he probably should just leave the house for a while. And the other one is a related word, of course, if one of us is really tired and, just doesn't feel like continuing with whatever project and we're cranky, we are cranky. I'm done here. I'm cranky. I need to go take a nap. So.
I love family words. I really do, Julie. I love the words that we create and become our own family lingo.
In the family of hangry, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we all have these needs for these words that fit our circumstances and that lovely life that we live together. Sometimes it's a pathological life, but we have our lives that we live those, and we need those, and they become kind of the glue that holds us together.
We're with Away With Words lexicographer Grant Barrett, our guide to the living language. What gets your vote for the best new word of the year? What words will wear out their welcome, date you if you use them? Join in. We'll be back in a minute with Grant Barrett here on the Ideas Network. The word allyship was dictionary.com's word of the year. We're exploring language, how it's changing on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the explanation for allyship, they said it acts as a powerful prism through which to view the defining events and experiences of 2021 and, crucially, how the public processed them. What pandemic-related words, language, is on your mind? Join in, 800-642-1234. We have linguist Grant Barrett, co-host of Away With Words, with us for the hour. Grant, we want to know, you know, in last year, Merriam-Webster selected pandemic as the word of the year. This year, it named vaccine the word of the year. What goes into selecting a word of the year?
Well, each dictionary has its own rules. I'm also a part of the American Dialect Society's Word of the Year vote, which was the original one, by the way. And all the the American Dialect Society doesn't have dictionaries to sell.
Just saying.
But the six dictionary companies that I know of that have words of the year, they generally look for stuff that was probably searched often on their platform. I know Merriam-Webster chooses that. They look for stuff that, even if it was searched often, it needs to be current for the regular year, because sometimes you'll see this stuff that's searched all the time because it appears on like SATs or our spelling list or that sort of thing. So you wouldn't want to include that if it's a top word. But stuff also that probably has legs, as they say in Hollywood, stuff that looks like it's going to be around for a while. And by that, I mean, it's easy to put the fun words down, but kind of one of the weird things about language is the fun words, while they're fun, they tend to burn out really fast. Hmm. They have a short life, you know, like mayflies. They just don't last.
Well, there was new slang that emerged in the pandemic. Dr. Anthony Fauci read one of those used in a tweet to Rolling Stone magazine.
Here's one that says, I got my first dose of the Fauci ouchie.
I got my first dose of the Fauci ouchie. What is your, I know you love slang. What is your favorite that has emerged in these times?
Oh, I really do like Fauci ouchie. I feel like you've pipped my choice there. Well, one thing that we have is what's called a combining form, and sometimes for the American Dialect Society's Word of the Year vote, we do a productive combining form is one of our categories. And Geddon is one of those, from Armageddon, G-E-D-D-O-N. And this year we had Shipageddon. Hmm. This is that massive cargo ships off the ports waiting to unload and being unable to because of a shortage of trucks and personnel. So the Shipageddon is just all these ports circling in the seas, waiting, Shipageddon.
Which has also released a term that is just used all the time now, supply chain. I mean,
supply chain, right?
You're hearing it everywhere.
We knew it, but now it's recently become a part of the daily zeitgeist. Instead of being just this jargon term, it's become an everyday term. It's weird how that happens, right? It's weird how something is just mundane and suddenly becomes super crucial and very important.
Oxford English Dictionary picked a slangier vax as its word of the year. What do you make of that slang type option in vax? It didn't really stand out to me.
Oh, no. I think in terms of the, how shall we put this delicately? The debate between the people who believe that vaccines are a step path forward and the people who believe that vaccines are not a step forward, the word vax was heavily used, whether it was pro-vax or anti-vax. And certainly when you are trying to cram a message into a tweet that is limited by characters, vax is very useful because it's short, three letters.
Grant Barrett with us, co-host of Away With Words, airs every Sunday here on the Ideas Network as we dissect the year in language with your questions. What came up for you in language this year? What phrases, what words piqued your interest? 800-642-1234. Mike is joining us from Bear Valley. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I have a question for Grant. Grant, I love your show. I listen to it often. I've got a question for you about a Midwestern phrase that has kind of stumped friends of mine when I leave the area. I sometimes get people asking me, why do you use the phrase a brand new? And I also have a slang term that seems appropriate for the times, and that is no poke. In other words, person who refuses to get vaccinated. But the question I've got about the phrase is brand new.
Brand new. And what does your gut tell you about that word?
Well, I grew up in I'm 72. I grew up in the Midwest, but then I moved out to New England. People at that time were confused with what brand new actually meant. I mean, why put those two words together in that configuration?
Yeah, so a brand has been a couple different things. A brand originally was a stick on fire, so it's a very a log of wood or a stick of wood pulled from the fire that was still burning on one end. And then, of course, everyone thinks of brands probably now from cowboy movies or actual real cowboys. It's the mark that you burn into the hide of an animal to show who the animal belongs to. And all of these have the idea of something freshly done. But really, it's the idea about fire feeling fresh and new. A brand that is on fire, a stick of wood that is on fire, is absolutely, you know, clean and fresh. There's nothing old about it. But again, it's all about having that fresh, new feeling of fire or the new mark made on the hide of an animal.
Well, here I thought new just needed a little bit of oomph. It needed a friend. It needed a little more pizzazz. So it got its, it teamed up with brand.
Yeah, it needed a brand, yeah. But definitely it's something that migrated, I believe, from the advertising world for the most part, but not completely.
Mike, thank you. Brian now in Sherwood. Brian, hi.
Hi there. Hey, Grant. Hey, I have a word and I have a phrase. The word that I'm hoping is going to be retired in 2022, because I cringe when I hear it, is the word amplify. I probably hear that 5 to 6 times a day now. The phrase that has spread like poison ivy through corporate America is the phrase value proposition.
Yeah, I could see why you might. Let me just put it this way: when somebody says I find stuff to be really common and it annoys me, I just say change your reading material. Read the New Yorker or the Atlantic or something. But maybe it's just the industry that you're in. What field do you work in?
Well, the corporate America one has spread from a couple of different businesses, a retail business, as well as a packaging business. And I almost joke that before you even say hello, you greet someone, hey, what's your value proposition? Because it was used just so often to become almost irritating.
Yeah, it's like that. It's just the same way that slang passes among kids from school to school, from group to group. It's the same way with the in the world of business. Everyone is looking for a way to take these big ideas and describe them briefly. And value proposition is easier to say than here's the real basic idea that I think makes our industry or our product or our business a real good investment or a real good buy. You know, it's essential to the business to come up with these shorthands. And yeah, they get passed around a lot. Amplify, I don't know. Any audiophile listening is like, what do you mean? Amplify, you mean in terms of amplifying a message, amplifying an idea. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, they typically use it for becoming more potent. So this particular formula will amplify the effects. So yeah, but I hear it quite often now, and I really do cringe whenever I hear it just because it's used almost obsessively.
Hmm.
Here's what Martha and I recommend on the show, and this is what I recommend to you real quick, is when you get yourself annoyed, write down who said it, why they said it, and what the context was, and keep in a list. Do field work for yourself, and pretty soon you'll find yourself thinking like a scientist and not as somebody who's annoyed.
So you'll start looking, finding patterns in language right. that, you know, kind of get under your skin, and maybe you can understand why that is a little bit more.
Yeah.
Exactly. Brian, thank you so much for joining in. Grant Barrett, co-host of Away With Words, leading us through the year in language. Tell us what your favorite slang words are from 2021. What words get under your skin? Would you agree with the dictionary gurus that it's vaccine or vax this year? How did you feel about the word burnout? Join in on language that caused you to pause. 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Grant Barrett after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. So can you land on a word that neatly sums up everything that happened this year? We're talking about our living language here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. What a pleasure to have lexicographer Grant Barrett, co-host of Away With Words, specializing in slang and new words we're talking about. And with us for the hour, let's bring on Chris now in Manitowoc. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi there. Grant, it's a real pleasure to be able to speak with you. My wife and I listen to your show all the time and love it. It was great to hear your story of how you got into this industry, because it's very similar for me, listening or starting to read The Lord of the Rings when I was a kid. My uncle was stationed in the army in Italy. I made a board with a bunch of different sayings in Italian. From there, I went on to study Spanish in high school and college, and Russian in the military. And I just love language, because for me, it's a lot like food. It's a cultural window into the way people think and interact. And I was able to travel for 30 years in international business. And some of the things that I learned and was able to communicate with people were incredible because of that interest. The screener asked me a question, like, what was one saying that I thought that just off the top of my head that I could relate to that was interesting, and I think one of them was like bless. So in England they'll say basically, if they think someone's doing something that's really idiotic or silly, they might say, oh, bless him, or bless. And I understand it's the same thing in southern United States, to do a similar thing. Oh, mm-hmm. Bless him.
Yeah, bless.
So the language is just a cultural window that everybody should be interested in learning more of.
Oh, Chris, love that. Chris, thank you. Grant, go ahead.
Oh, it was just well put. I love to hear the enthusiasm. I agree with Chris. It's any amount of any language that you can learn that you don't already know, you should do it. If it's just the words for yes and no and hello and please and thank you, do it. Learn those words and add them to your vocabulary. You do not have to have perfect mastery of another language. Just learn what you can, when you can, a little bit here, a little bit there. And it feels wonderful when you make that connection, when you're watching a show and there's a little bit of dialogue and they pop out at you and you're like, whoa, wait a second. I got that. That's amazing.
Well, and Chris brings up less and some words that are used in the Deep South. And I like to sprinkle those in my life as well, having lived in Louisiana for a number of years. Like, I'll say I'm fixing to do something, which sure. means it's not happening right away, kids. We're not. This is not in the next couple minutes. And then, you know, I'll say when I'm out going out the door, I'm a gone pecan. And I don't know. It's just fun to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, language is fun, and when we get kind of tied up with our words and we can't quite put the right thing down on paper or on the keyboard, sometimes the best thing to do is to goof off on the page, just kind of be silly, and you'll be surprised how easy then it is to say the right thing once you've just let your wildness go.
Jerry now in Amherst. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Grant.
Hi, Jerry.
So this has been bothering me for a while, because I listen to your show all the time, and you've been also guests on a certain food show, and I have a question about pronunciation of foods from other countries. Some are very Americanized. For instance, I hear the host of a food show use the word biscotti, which, being of Italian descent, I have no idea what that is, but I know what a biscotti is. And yet I've never heard them say tortilla or soufflette or I mean, there are some words that they seem to really strain themselves to pronounce correctly, and others that are just like, we'll just soften all the vowels and make it whatever. So I guess that's my question. I mean, why some and not others?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. He's talking about Martha and I sometimes do guest appearances on Chris Kimball's Milk Street, which is a lovely show. And each word has its own entrance into the language. And so each foreign word is anglicized to its own degree. So some, as you know, are more English sounding and some aren't. Like, we don't say burrito, we say burrito, which is very un-Spanish like. Well, I say tortilla, but only as a joke in my house. tortilla in Spanish or tortilla in English. And yeah, they each have their own path. One of the things you'll find among cooks is that the French words tend to sound more French, and the non-French words tend to sound more English. And partly that's just the French influence on American cuisine. A lot of our traditions are French. And so there's a far more French spoken and far more French that has really persisted. So the words have resisted Anglicism.
Jerry, thank you for that call. We're going to go to the classroom now. Linda in Milwaukee. Linda, hi.
Hi, Kate. Hi, Grant. I just had to call in and give you these two words that I am thinking were made up by kids in school this year. And one is roomies, which meant kids attending school in their classroom, or zoomies, which were kids attending school via Zoom. So kids would use this as, are you a roomie or are you a zoomie? So I thought those were two classy words that kids probably developed this past year, 18 months.
Oh, indeed. And warms my heart. Certainly in our schools as well, roomies and zoomies, totally common to use. What do you think, Grant?
I love those. I am going to put those down to find out if those are more widely used, because they seem too perfect. Those are really good words. I would not be surprised if they're widespread. Wow, roomies and zoomies. I'll have to ask Martha about that if she knows more.
Roomies and zoomies is a very good sorting tool, because you need to know how many roomies you have in the classroom, how many people are on Zoom. And as a teacher, that's very important to have those numbers and also create that community in both mediums, whether you're in person or over the internet. So absolutely, Linda, roomies and zoomies, so much a part of our lives. Thank you for the call. This is so much fun. Grant Barrett here, co-host of Away With Words. We hear him on Sundays on the Ideas Network at 9 as we explore language, how it's evolved this year in 2021. Join in, 800-642-1234. We're going to go to Rick now in Madison. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Hi,
thanks
good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am wondering if Grant can tell everyone the origins of guys. I've always wanted to ask you this. For example, when you're meeting a group of men, you say, how are you guys doing? But when you often people, when they hear, when they see women, they say, how are you guys doing? And I'm just wondering how that got switched. Not sure the right word, but between male and female.
Well, it broadened. It broadened to go from just male to being male and female, not just female. So it's what's called evocative use. It's in direct address, where when you are talking to a group of people, whether it's all men and women, or all women, you can say you guys. And if you want any evidence that women use it to other women, just go to YouTube and find things like makeup tutorials. And a lot of times they're started as, hey guys, or hey you guys, I've got a new da 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 da. And although men do wear makeup, it's just generally a female audience. So it's really interesting to see that. But it's only in that particular use of direct address. But if you tend to say, oh, bring all the guys into the room, we're ready for them now, and everyone outside of the room is women, that kind of doesn't ring true. But your original question is a really interesting one about where we get guy from. It comes from Guy Fawkes, the guy who tried to blow up Parliament. Guy Fawkes was burned in effigy. You know, the little British kids going around saying a penny for the guy, where you would give them a penny so that they could afford to build their little effigy to burn at the right time of year. And then, and eventually that guy was used to talk to describe any man as a guy. And it brought in from there, just kind of became a general term of address for a man, like Mac or buddy or pal or dude.
Interesting. Rick, thanks. I want to switch gears here. There's been this growing racial and social justice movement with its own vocabulary, its own anti-racism vocabulary. And these terms are really spilling over into culture. Woke has been around for a while. How do you go about defining it?
Well, you've got to look at the people who use it, just like any other word. Who is using it? Why are they using it? Do they have a stake in it? That's part of it. So, for example, woke is one of those words that has one meaning to the people who started it and another meaning to the people who consider it to be a negative trait. So you've got to look at that and see if those can be reconciled, or if it's worth paying attention to all facets of the use. Generally, when there's this kind of social conflict involved, where one side is standing up for its rights, generally you will find the other side, or multiple sides, are trying to tear down a definition and redefine it as something negative. And so you've got to be very alert to that. But generally you look for use. How have they used it in print? Or if you can have transcripts, how have they used it in interviews or in conversation? And just really look very carefully at the context and the situation and the speakers.
Context matters so much when you hear terms like dismantling structures, decentering whiteness, the term social justice. It lacks specifics unless you know context, I suppose. Are these really fuzzy terms to you?
Well, they would be outside of those fields of interest. And that's kind of where a lot of this conflict comes into play. If you come across these terms and you are not part of the movement, you may develop your own general ideas about what they mean. Whereas inside the movement, they have a very specific idea that doesn't really match this general idea that you as a bystander have developed for yourself. And this is where we see people not getting it or not really fully investing themselves in this sort of change.
Away with Words, public radio program host, linguist Grant Barrett with us, touring us through the nuance of language, how it's changing, how to think about it differently. Still time to explore language, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're back. It's Language here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dictionary editors, it is their job to study the language and add new words to the dictionary. They revise, they refresh definitions year in, year out based on usage. Are you an armchair lexicographer? What have you noticed about how language changed this year? Still time, 800-642-1234. We have linguist and public radio host Away With Words, Grant Barrett, with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring on Matt now in Milwaukee. Hi, Matt.
Good morning. My question for Grant is related to two words, conservative and liberal. And whenever I want a deeper understanding of a word, I'll I'll look up the roots of the word. And, you know, with liberal, you tend to get something like freedman or freedom. And with conservative, it's Latin is con means with, and service means like servants. And I'm just curious if that's where the real definition of those words lie.
That's doing that to come up with the meaning of a word is leads you down a path toward etymological fallacy, as it's known. While the etymology can give you a clue to the meaning of the word, it does not rule the meaning of a word. It's not the final word. You really need to look at the actual definitions in a modern dictionary to really understand it, especially political terms where they can flip. One party in one decade can mean one thing, and in another decade it can mean another thing. The liberals in the U.S. are different from the liberals, say, in Australia, and conservatives in this country are different from the conservatives in that country. So it can lead you, it can give you a clue to the start of the term, but not necessarily the current meaning of the term.
A tangent here, perhaps, but along those lines, how would a dictionary then go about expanding the definition of a word? When is it time for them to add more to the definition?
They have a regular editing schedule. They work their way through the alphabet. They tend to actually, when they're coming up with new additions, they tend to pick a letter somewhere in the middle of the alphabet and start there. Hmm. And they will just look at their citation files. These are files of the words actually being used in speech or print, and they will just go through them and perhaps get more evidence and just to see how they've changed. They have people looking for them, and they look for themselves to just to see what the major writers and thinkers and publications of the day are doing with language.
Jack now in Cedarburg is with us. Hi, Jack. What would you like to say about language?
Hi, I've always had a question about country names. For instance, we refer to Spain as Spain, but when I see or hear Spanish people from Spain, or I see it on a listing, I watch the Golf Channel, and they'll list Spanish golfers as ESP for short. It's called España. Same with Italy and many other country location names. Why do we change it? We wouldn't do that with a person's last name. If somebody's Smith, they're Smith around the world.
Well, they're not actually, because the name Smith, there are lots of equivalents of Smiths in lots of different languages. So it's kind of the same with country names. Country names really have to do about when we first encountered them as English speakers. The more recently a country was created or its name was created, the more likely we are to use the name that it gives itself.
Hmm.
Not always, but more likely. And so the older our relationship is with the country, the more likely it is that the name will differ. Germany is a great example that some of its names are so very different from each other that if I gave you a list of all the things that Germany is called in other European languages, you might not even recognize that they refer to the same country.
Hmm.
And it's because Germany, although its borders have changed a lot, the relationship that it has with other countries has depended upon different tribes and different leadership and different regional attributes and so forth. It has to do really with that, about that early relationship.
Jack, thank you for that. Well, since we're across the pond, another term used the past few months is boosted. And here is British Prime Minister Boris Johnson using it in a message to UK residents.
Today, we're launching the Omicron emergency booster national mission, unlike anything we've done before in the vaccination program. To get boosted now.
To get boosted now. Is boosted a term that will have some shelf life?
I think so, as long as we have the need for booster shots. I absolutely do think so. But it's a term I believe that was already used in medicine to refer to just the typical booster shots that you might give yourself or a child for other things that we've long had vaccines for.
And in that message, Johnson used the word Omicron, the 15th letter of the Greek alphabet. Unlike other Greek letters like Alpha or Delta, this one has been harder to pronounce. What are the pronunciations floating out there, and what do you think?
Well, he said Omicron,
yes,
and but many people say Omicron. Omicron is probably the better pronunciation, but people tend to think of O as in Omega or Ohm as in the measurement of electricity when they say the word. So either really works, but if you're a news reader or a radio announcer, you probably want to say Omicron.
Well, let's go back to the business world. There's been the Great Resignation. How did this term gain traction?
Well, we're finding that with the unemployment being low and the workforce dwindling, both because boomers are retiring and because people have not gone back into the workforce after the pandemic, that people are finding that the cards are in the favor of the employee and they're able to quit jobs that they've long disliked and look for better work. It's also known as the big quit. So the Great Resignation, people are quitting their jobs because they can now. They can go out there and negotiate for better pay, better conditions, and better opportunities for advancement, which is something that they didn't feel that they could do before.
What do you make of ghosting coasting, which is a new phrase circulating in the workplace?
I don't know if the term will catch on, but the idea is that an employee moves from job to job after a short time, probably after days or weeks, and as a way to try out jobs. To ghost is been a slang term for a while. That means that you leave without notice. And coasting means you kind of just like don't really do your work. You're just kind of like there just to see how things are happening. So ghosting, coasting. What I'm seeing in the slang world is that more and more words and language related to employment are coming up. There's a subreddit on the Reddit social network called Anti-Work, A-N-T-I-W-O-R-K, and it has exploded in membership, and I keep my eye on that. And there are a ton of people out there who are really firmly a part of this idea that we're in a movement is happening where people are in a position to negotiate for better conditions. So we'll see. And when that happens, when there's a movement, there's new language to follow.
We only have a few seconds left, but what about you? What are your favorite new words this year?
Me personally?
Yes.
Oh, I'd love the name for the early hominid that was found in China. It's possibly the most closely related to modern humans. It's known as Homo longi, L-O-N-G-I. It's from about 146,000 years ago, and they call him Dragon Man.
Oh, Grant, thank you so much for joining us. How fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Kate. I really appreciate it. And happy holidays to you and everyone else.
You too. Grant Barrett, lexicographer and linguist. We know him as co-host, co-producer of Away With Words, which airs Sunday mornings at 9 on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.